everybody. What's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and just getting you set up here for a special presentation. This is going to be the podcast audio of a panel that ran on Wednesday night called Whose Tribe Is It Anyway? LGBTQ Intersectionality on Survivor. In just a moment, you're going to hear me introducing the panel's moderator, Nicole Simmons. This was a panel that was put together by Jatia Hart, who has been part of the Soul Survivor organization. They are the organizers of the Survivor anti-racism petition that I'm sure you've heard about by this point. But we've been doing these interviews with some of the Black Survivor alumni, and we had the Black Survivor Roundtable a couple of weeks ago. And this is a panel that was really focused on LGBTQ intersectionality, getting to hear from a bunch of the different LGBTQ alumni from Survivor. And they have a lot of interesting stories that they haven't been able to talk about, their specific experiences as they went through casting, what they experienced on the island. And I'm really glad that we were able to help set up this venue to be able to have them be able to share their experiences, because these stories are so important in exploring, in trying to make Survivor a more equal playing field. But maybe even more importantly, that the stories that these Survivor players have are the same stories that people in the LGBTQ community face not in Survivor. So it's a great way for people to really understand what these people went through. You'll hear from Lyrsa Torres, Vince Mawa, Bryce Isaiah, Missy Bird, and Zeke Smith on this panel. So I really hope you enjoy this presentation. And of course, you can check out the video. It is up on Jatia's YouTube channel, or you can go to JatiaPhD.com/LGBTQ. Hey, everybody, what's going on? I'm Rob Cesternino, and so happy that you can join us. I was really thrilled when recently Jatia Hart reached out to me on behalf of the Soul Survivor organization to expand on the conversations that we've been having on Rob as a podcast with Black Survivors to include discussions with members of Survivor's LGBTQ community. So tonight, in collaboration with the AV Club and the Soul Survivors, who've created the Survivor Anti-Racism Petition, it is my pleasure to help sponsor tonight's panel on intersectionality. And it is my honor to turn over this conversation to tonight's moderator. In addition to being a former pop culture journalist, she is also a PhD candidate at Emory University, Nicole Simmons.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rob. And hey, everyone, I'm so excited to be here. Again, thanks goes out to you, Rob, as well as the AV Club and, of course, the Soul Survivor Group. So we are excited to jump into tonight's discussion, which is about intersectionality, LGBTQ intersectionality on Survivor. So as anyone who is familiar with intersectionality as a concept, you know that you cannot talk about it without talking about the scholarship of Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. So just to kind of catch us all up to speed, so we know that the definition that we're working with when we're talking about intersectionality, we are thinking about the oppression first, according to Crenshaw, that Black women face as being subject to violences according to their race and their gender, which means that Black women are subject to racism and sexism. Carrying that forward, and in particular to what we're doing tonight, we're looking at the fact that intersectionality has to do with intersecting identities. So this causes a friction and a complicated lived experience for LGBTQ people. So we are gathering tonight to break it down so it consistently can remain broken. And we have a wonderful group of panelists with which to do that. So we want to start off by allowing everybody to introduce themselves, and then we will get rolling. So everybody, welcome, and let's get into it.
All right, I'll start us off. Hey guys, I'm Missy Bird. I'm from season 39 of Survivor. I'm 26. I'm an Air Force veteran, currently in grad school, and I'm really excited to be here. That's good. Pass it to Vince.
You think more on your own trader than I am from season 39 as well. Currently working at Stanford University as before as admissions counselor. It's been a wonderful time just talking with my fellow castaways here. So I'm hoping that we can have further conversations today. I'm going to pass it to Lyrsa.
Hi guys, I'm Lyrsa. I'm from season 37, David versus Goliath, and currently I'm working for Springdrift, which is a sparkling water. And my background is in archaeology, specialized in the Caribbean cookbooks from mid-19th century. And I'll pass it.
Hey guys, I am Bryce Isaiah from season 28, Kagyan, and I am the host of the Purple Pants podcast, and I'm so excited to be here to have all of our voices heard and to really have a meaningful discussion.
Hello, I'm Zeke Smith. I'm from seasons 33 and 34. And I was so excited and so very honored to be part of this conversation. And it brings me great joy that the place that brought me to Survivor almost, RHAP, is also hosting it. So I think we're going to have a great night.
Excellent. So I'm really excited to get the conversation started. And so let's kind of set the context for why we are here. Again, we talked about intersectionality. And one of the things that's interesting about Survivor as a show is that it has this reputation of being a queer or gay cult following, having a big cult following. So Joseph Longo from Mel Magazine actually called it the gayest show on earth. And so I want to talk about what that's about, right? So what makes Survivor the space it is for not only LGBTQ players, but also LGBTQ watchers? So what do you think it about the show that makes it that? What's the opportunity that it presents?
We sort of had a powwow. I'm not just jumping in. We had a powwow about who would answer certain questions, and I got this one. So I really think it begins with the first season and Richard Hatch winning. It was the year 2000. Gay marriage was not even in the conversation. And yet you have like this big, unabashed, naked gay guy win his way through a competition that was supposed to be a survival of the fittest. And we learn that fittest doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, muscles and speed. It means your social fitness, your ability to adapt. And I think LGBT people as outsiders really, I think, latched on to this idea. It's like, oh, this is a game I can play. And even though I experience oppression in the real world, in Survivor, in this unique environment, in this unique arena, maybe I can overcome that. And I think we're here to answer the question of whether or not that A, that was ever true, and B, if it is true now. I think the second part is, while there is so much that is problematic about Survivor's representation of LGBT people, and particularly Black, Indigenous, and people of color, queer and Black, Indigenous people of color, you know, Survivor does have a history of telling unique stories. I think of like Thai. You know, where else are we hearing the story of a Vietnamese immigrant who has come to the United States and made a new world for himself and wants to bring beauty to the game of Survivor? Donathan, we're not the stories of our queer siblings in red states. Those are not being told. Josh and Reed, the stories of queer Christians. Those are stories that are not often told. And I think a lot of us who are endeared to Survivor thinking, they get us. And I think we don't so much look at, you know, sort of like Bill Posley basically being voted off because he was Black, or, you know, that Chet in season 16, like basically was the victim of a hate crime. You know, we sort of whitewash over those. But I think queer people see Survivor as a friend and as a place where knowing how to navigate difficult social situations, which queer people have to do all the time, can be an asset.
Thank you, Zeke. Did anybody have a follow-up? I'm especially thinking about what it means for the show to be called Survivor, right? By nature, how might people kind of gravitate toward the concept of Survivor that the show is constructed around?
I think that it is, we have to survive in our everyday lives. And I think that it's something that we learn at a very early age. Like, you know, when you realize that you're different and that you're being teased and that these things that come up. So very early on, we have to adapt to things. And so it makes us great for Survivor because it's, you know, built for us. But at the same time, those same things that we are built for, they also kind of turn their back on us a little bit. And a lot of the times, like, you know, because we are, I'm the gay person on the show, like I'm untrustworthy because, oh, gay people aren't untrustworthy. And so it's a lot of just these different things. And so just another quick point is that, like, I definitely think the phenomenon of Survivor and with the queer following that it has, and they do show a broad spectrum of different things. But I find the spectrum that they really kind of lack us is the LGBTQ people of color. And it is that, you know, we have two LGBT winners, white men. And, you know, where are the representation of us gay players of color? Why is it that we're always pre-merged? Why is it that, like, we are never shown? Why is it that it's just, you know, you see us in these very short clips, and why isn't our story told like a Donathan? Why isn't our story told like a Josh Reed? Why isn't our story told like a Richard Hatch? And so that also kind of just popped in my mind when Zeke was talking, but it's definitely a show that I gravitated to. I love, it's my favorite show ever. And I'm so blessed to be able to have had the opportunity to be on it. But I'm so grateful for the opportunity for a panel like this to actually hear our perspectives from people that you don't generally hear from.
Yeah. And Bryce, I think that you kind of get us to a significant point, which is thinking about the fact that Survivor as a show is also constructed around being a social experiment. And so what is the role that gender and sexuality play on Survivor, right? What are the negotiations that one has to make regarding those categories? And is there a sense, we kind of talked about this in our first series, that one has to lean into one part of one's identity and lean out of another? So do you have to lean into being a black man before you lean into being a gay one, or lean into being a woman before being a lesbian? And so I think that Vince can kick us off in responding to this, and then we'll, you know, piggyback and hear from others.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, like, you have to think about first and foremost is that Survivor is not so much a social experiment of how a new society is created, rather than it is a social experiment looking at how the ways in which we already have been socially kind of influenced, and looking at the folkways, the mores, the social conditionings that we bring with us, the biases that we bring with us, the players, how we bring that into a new foreign environment and then create something that is truly the microcosm of our real world, right? Everyone talks about it. Survivor is the microcosm of our real world. That means that racism exists. That means that sexism exists. That means that ageism exists, right? So because of that, when we think about what gender and sexuality, how they play a role, they definitely play roles, right? We have to come in, for women in particular. If you look at statistics, statistically, women are voted out quite early in the game. Statistically, only like 15 winners have been women, I believe, or so, and only 4 of them women of color. But that's like really 3 because Sandra won twice. No, Queen Stay Queen. But so when we look at gender and sexuality, those things are integrally related, and then very much so like dictate how people kind of prescribe their own perceptions of who you are, right? Especially for me as a gay Asian American man who was not super mask presenting, and then also not super buff and 6'2" and ripped, then there were perceptions of like, oh dang, Vane's gonna be a physical liability. Oh dang, he's, you know, one of the tribe mates actually said in his own interview that he's just an Asian version of Zeke that's going to cause kind of like all this disruption in the game. And so when you're met with those things, you do have to think, you know, how do I make sure, first and foremost, that for me at least, that the men and the women are not going to think that I'm a physical liability because I packed on some pounds prior to going on rather than packing on muscle. But then also thinking of how to like switch between more masculine versus effeminate language and how you talk with folk. And then on top of that, you got to add on race and you got to add on socioeconomic differences. And so it definitely is a process through which you have to decide, like, who am I going to be? Basic Becky for these people, and then, like, homeboy Vince for these people, and then, like, butch mask Vince for the men. Like, yeah, bruh, I'm ready to, like, work with y'all. And then, you know, it's a very interesting kind of situation to be placed in, because as Bryce said, for gay men in particular, who have been more represented on the show, you're always kind of stuck between like, oh, the women can't trust you. You're kind of a tangentially related species of people who are somewhat classified as feminine enough, but they're not. So they're like, maybe it's too much to ask for the gay guy to be aligned with us. We don't know why he wants to align with us. And then the men, or the straight men, don't want to talk with you. They don't want to work with you because they think you're working with the women. So it's this weird divide of having to truly find out, like, how do I best take advantage of either my gender, my sexuality, my race or ethnicity, my socioeconomic background? How do I take advantage of those intrinsic values and qualities and then bring it into this game in such a way that it is palatable for the majority? And I think that's where it's very difficult to traverse this game.
I wanted to jump in too after Vince said that, because playing on his season and watching it play out and then hearing what Bryce said, as a woman, we are statistically voted out first. And then also as a Black woman, we are statistically voted out first. And so me being gay didn't really even come into the picture for me pre-merge, because I didn't know how to navigate being Black and also female. So I wasn't sure how to play the first couple of days. I wasn't sure how to act towards my castmates, because I knew anything that I do, it could be an easy target to send me home, and the statistics are not on my side. And so I found myself, it was just very difficult to navigate on Lyro for me, because I didn't know who could I share my sexuality with. Some gay people, you have kind of like that, it's kind of like that gay nod, you know, right away, and you feel like you feel comfortable talking to them and opening up to them. But with most people, I wasn't sure how my tribe would react. I'm already two minorities that put me at risk of being voted out. Do I want to speak in my truth and be myself, or do I want to lower my threat level? It's a really hard and difficult thing to walk for someone that belongs in so many different minority groups.
I do also want to say, following up with that too, sorry, but the ways in which gender and gender roles play out in the game start from the very beginning. For us, when we landed on the island, one of the first things that happened was we found a place, we were going to build a shelter, and then immediately one of the other male contestants said, okay, the women can clear this area and the men can go gather stuff. And immediately I was like, nah, ladies, you do what you want to do. The men can stay here and gather things and clear this as well. Y'all want to gather things, go ahead and go. And so when it comes to navigating gender and sexuality and other things, you really, as a cis male, and then if you're straight cis male, you have to really take advantage of or recognize your privilege and then use that in such a way that you are ready to really betray the patriarchy. Because that is what our societies are built off of, and that is also what is brought into the game. So you have to be ready to, you know, if Chelsea wants to make the fire, that you're going to be like, Chelsea, why don't you try making the fire? Because, you know, the two guys are not going to let her do it. So that's just another thing I want to add.
Yeah, and I love that, because I, you know, as I was listening to you all talk, I was like, how do we bridge that gap, right? Bridge the gap that suggests that you have to make a decision between intersecting identities, that you must be the man or you must be the woman, or you must choose to be the gay player. And so I think that one of the things that we're sort of angling toward is the fact that people have to get comfortable with the intersecting identity so that a player can bring their full self into the game. Otherwise, you're kind of playing as a fragment, right? Or a half of yourself. And I mean, I guess in some ways that might mimic the ways in which reality, the real world, is constructed, but you don't want to spend a whole game being that. So I appreciate you all sort of bridging that gap. So my next question is kind of directed toward Bryce. And so this is in regard to kind of being considered the first, right? The first openly gay Black male player, but also the sort of critiques or criticisms that people could wage, because if we're honest, some people can't deal with Black boy joy. It's too much. They want you to just sort of like stay Black, be quiet. Why do you have to, in some ways, you know, there's gay agendas that people think is at play. So talk about the challenge of being Black and queer and in your position on Survivor and how you kind of negotiate that and, you know, make your way forward.
So that's such a loaded question. And when I think about that, I even think about my real life, because for me, Survivor really kind of like mimicked my real life in a lot of different ways. And I am a very boisterous person. And I find that even given the climate of the country today, and when I want to stand up and say like, yes, Black Lives Matter, and I want to champion, and you know, if we say Black Lives Matter, Black Gay Lives Matter. And to hear so much feedback or issues or problems that people in my own community have taken up with me saying that my Black gay life matters. It just kind of like reminds me, like even back on the island, that like I am a part of a marginalized community. And I'm not just part of one marginalized community. I'm part of two marginalized communities. And in those two marginalized communities, I'm even more marginalized, because in the Black community, I'm gay. And in the gay community, I'm Black. And so it is such a hard thing for me to want to like speak my voice and to like not always feel like I have to get defensive. But truth be told, every day of my life is surviving. It's surviving in the Black community. It's surviving in the gay community. And when we talk about the gay community, that a lot of people don't like to talk about, but the gay community truly is a cisgendered white male community. And what I mean by that, it's like it's for the white gay man. They are not necessarily representing of people of color. And we've seen this in the recent years of them adding the brown and Black color to the flag. And it just is, for me, sometimes it becomes overwhelming because you think about Stonewall and you think about the people who really were moving forward in Stonewall. They were Black trans women, you know, Marsha P. Johnson. And when it really started to kind of make headlines, they were told that they have to take a back seat because no one could take them seriously leading this crusade. And I just find it so ironic that here I am, this openly Black gay man that is so proud to be Black, so proud to be gay. And I want to champion to see the betterment of my people. And at the same time, I am told that I need to be quiet. I need to just be Black. And it's like, what I don't understand is that, or what I don't believe they understand is, baby, guess what? I can't just be Black. I can't just be gay. That like, this is who I am. And this is my truth. And I think that when it reflects back to Survivor, it's that, again, I was the first openly gay Black player, and they had no idea how or what my story was. And, you know, when we got to the beach and we went out there, I specifically said to myself in my head, I said, Bryce, you not going to be lazy at camp. You're going to go out there and you are going to show them how athletic you are, how such a hard worker you are. And to my detriment, because I was such a hard worker, because I got up before the sun got up to stoke the fire, because I went and got all the bamboo to build for the shelter, the men on my tribe then turned to themselves and said, well, wait a minute, this is not what we recognize, and immediately became a threat. And immediately, like, and I'm like, well, geez, and I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. Like, so if I would have just laid back and been lazy, then it'd be like, oh, see, there go the gay guy, ain't doing nothing. But here I am rising to the occasion, and yet I am met with, I'm a threat. But yet on other seasons and other players, when we see white gay men, they do that. They're brought in. They're brought into the fold. And so it's definitely something that I struggle with in my personal life because it weighs so much on me. Because I just feel like, why do I have to explain my being? You know, like when you just think about that and like you and people really can reflect on their privileges in life. The fact that yes, that's a privilege that other people can go out and just be themselves with no explanation. But yet for me, my struggle is that everywhere I go, no matter where I go, I have to explain who I am. And it takes such a toll on me. But being, you know, my mother raised a very strong black gay boy, and I could use that and be so bitter at the world and be so nasty, but I do a 360. Instead, the hate and the disrespect that I get on a constant basis, I meet it with love. I truly do. Like, I truly try to let the love that I wish that people could really see when they look at me and not try to figure out what is or why is that. That is truly what I try to reflect and what I try to project. Because if I want to lead by example, then I must show the way. But I will say sometimes it's harder than others. I'm only human, but I truly try to project that because it's so important for me and it's so important for me. And I don't want to keep talking, but it's just so important for me because even more recently, how vocal I have been, I've been getting emails from young gay that are just saying like, keep going. I love you. I never saw what it could be like. And so for me, it's just so important. And so for me, it's just like, yes, I hope that as we continue to talk, that we really open the minds and hearts to people to understand that like what we got to go through. And just as simple as just having to explain your being. And like, you know, I want all of our allies out there that are listening to like, when we say privilege, like, you know, sometimes your own privilege is the fact that you could just be Sally Mae June Boone and you don't have to do nothing about it. So, but yes.
Thank you for that, Bryce. And I want to obviously open this up because I think it's a significant discussion. I don't want to keep bringing this point home, but we're talking about intersectional identities. And so I think that Bryce raises many great points about his identity as a black gay man. And I would love for those who feel comfortable to share their same, especially what it means to sort of be the first or be the only or be a particular kind of representative from your community to a broader community and the challenges that are inherent in being that. So for anyone that kind of feels comfortable sharing their experience, I would love to hear that. And I think it would be a value to our viewers.
I think I want to touch on the show. I love to share my experiences as a veteran, as African-American, as a woman, also as being gay. But what kind of was a touchy subject in confessionals for me was, I'm not a token. I don't want to be tokenized. I don't speak for the entire gay community. I don't speak for the entire black community. And it seemed that some of the questions in my confessionals were just, and I think Bryce could also speak to this too, what is it like to be this way? Why did you choose a girl as your girlfriend? If you are a straight person, you probably have never been asked, why did you choose to have a boyfriend? So I don't think that's an accurate question to ask me, why did I choose to have a girlfriend? I chose a girlfriend because love is love. She's beautiful and I want to be with her. So to get asked questions like that, instead of questions that move the conversation forward, it just kind of hurt to be on the show and to know that some of these stories can get picked up and can spread to a nation and little gay children everywhere, little black gay girls like me can watch this and want to emulate this. But then to not be receiving the questions that would let me move the conversation forward was very frustrating. I'm not just a token that you can put on a TV show and then she's a gay girl. I want to have actual conversations about what it's like. And to be on the island, I had a couple of conversations with Vince where I felt so comfortable with him that I was able to open up with them and be myself. And the conversation for me, it was one of the best conversations on the island. He was teaching me how to cut a fish and gut it for the first time, which I had no idea how to do. And it was just such a nice conversation to be having with him that I told him, my family didn't know that I was gay before going out on the show. In many ways, I thought that the show would be their way of having this conversation, because obviously the things that I discuss about my personal life would be on the show. And to have this groundbreaking conversation with Vince and feel safe and comfortable to speak to him in this way, a stranger that I just met 10 days ago, and then for it to not make the edit, I think that maybe if we would have more representation, not only on the show for queer people, but also in production for queer people, maybe they would focus on that. And same thing with having a conversation with Elaine. I felt very comfortable talking with both Elaine and Vince. And to have neither one of those conversations make air about what it's like to be gay, how you feel even on the island about being gay, is it because we don't have the representation on the production as well?
Yeah, I want to follow up with that. That for me is still one of the best things that happened to me out on Survivor and in life in general. Like, it was, the sun was setting, Missy and I were out there teaching how to and I remember at that moment, I was just, and this is the issue of being the first, right? Of being the first person to disclose something, being the first person to tell something of this, if of this identity, of your identity to somebody else, it's very scary. And I really had to, like, control myself to not cry in that space. And then I was interviewed, and the producer asked me, like, so you and Timothy just had a very tender moment. What are your thoughts about it? And I just cried. Because I know, as we said earlier, it's so hard for our communities, especially queer people of color, to come out. And so for you to come out to a person who you've only known for, I think at that time, like 4 days, it just meant so much to me. And I was, as Missy said, I think if there were people in the background, in the production side, who were LGBTQ identified, maybe that would have made the cut, because it speaks so much, right, to how stories and narratives can change. So that, yeah, that was, it's still wonderful. I still think of that moment all the time. But in regards to being the first, too, I think that's something that is integrally important in moving narratives forward. I'm the first Hmong American gay person to play on such a large and widespread reality TV show. And that in itself has allowed, you know, younger Southeast Asian LGBTQ folk to reach out. That's been one of the best things about this, is that they have been like, I have never seen anybody who is dark skinned, who is Southeast Asian, who does not fit stereotypical norms, and also be coming from the Chonai, so, you know, growing up lower income. So that's been wonderful. And what, before coming on the show, I had a lot of reservations because of my work, and because I was just starting my work actually when I called for the final auditions, and the HR manager, Judy, shout out to you, Judy, she was like, Vince, it only takes one person. It only takes one person and things can change. If you want to be that one person, go for it. I am in full support of you. And so with that message going forward too, you know, if Vince can do it, y'all can do it. And so if you want to be that first, if you want to give opportunities elsewhere, like, take advantage of those things.
I was thinking, listening to all of this, that and during the audition process, when I went in, I knew I was going to be the token lesbian. I knew this. And in the audition process, in one of the interviews really early on in that final week in LA, they asked me, which of the girls you think is hot and attractive? And they didn't know I already had a girlfriend back home and I was in a committed relationship. I didn't say that to them. And they knew I was dating someone, but they didn't thought it was serious. And they were asking me all of that. And at some point I had to tell them, you need to stop asking me who I think is hot, because first of all, I have a girlfriend, which I am faithful and loyal and I love. And just because I am a lesbian, it doesn't mean that I want to sleep with all women. I want to sleep with a specific woman. Although, you know, you might think that. And they stopped that. And it was never brought up. Instead, during my one-on-ones, they focus on me being a Latina. And how are you going to say this? How would you say this in Spanish? If this happened in PR, how is this going to, like, how will this go over there? And the whole time, being gay was never brought up again, except on that first, you know, confessional that I said that I wanted to work with Elizabeth and we were different because I was a punk rock and lesbian and she was like straight Republican, everything I was not. And we even had a conversation in the shelter about who we were one night and, you know, opening up about ourselves. And I told them about how I used to go to church and I was very active in my church until they learned I was a lesbian and I was Sean. And it was really traumatic for me because I was involved in my church since I was a kid. And I when I received that from them, which is a safe place, it's a place of God, and we're supposed to love everybody. And I told them this, how I felt at that moment in my life, and it never made the show. They mostly concentrated on me being a Latina. And when I came in, I knew I was going to be portrayed as something, but I hope that I was going to be that token lesbian because one of the reasons I love Survivor so much, it was because I could see people like me on the show and they disregard that. And that was never, you know, talked about. And I thought that was going to be a great experience for me to reach out to other people that look like me, that could relate to me. And I think they really missed an opportunity there with me. And yeah, that's what I have to say. That the compartmentalization for me was extremely difficult because we go to a show that we know we're going to get portrayed as something. And as Bryce said, we have to work harder than everybody because all the time we are portrayed as minorities that we're like slacking and we are weak. And when I won that first challenge, I wasn't thinking, sorry guys, I wasn't thinking of my tribe. While I was doing that course, I was thinking I have to win this for the chunky nuggets back at home. I have to win this challenge for the Puerto Ricans that are going to watch this. I have to win this challenge for the women. I have to win this challenge for the gay people, you know, and I did it. And it was so overwhelming when I won it because I wasn't winning it for me. I wasn't winning it for my tribe. I felt I was winning it for all the people that I represent, you know, and I was never asked about that. Never.
And I want to say I was.
Can I comment?
Oh,
today.
No, go ahead, Bryce.
No, you go ahead. Well, I was just going to say to comment on Lyrissa, it made me think about my time on the island. And whenever I got pulled for confessionals, they like the number one question they would always ask me is, who do you think is hotter, Jeremiah or LJ? And I couldn't understand that because I'm a new player of Survivor. And I wasn't like in the Survivor fandom like how I am now. I was a casual player. I watched with my friends. I didn't really know about production. I just watched it as a show and left. But one thing that like struck a chord with me is like, why do y'all keep asking me who I'm attracted to? Like, I mean, I'm obviously gay. So it's like, you don't need to play on that trope of like, who do I like? And I'm so much more than that. Like I'm strategic, but see, and this brings me to the point of that maybe that producer really never experienced a gay black person before. And so like, he's like, oh, okay. I like, who do you like? And so it kind of just talks about this intersectionality and the diversity that we want to see. And so that it, imagine what it would be like. Can we all imagine if we had a gay black person being my interview person, like imagine the type of things that they would have been able to get out of me. Imagine the type of strategic that they could have like talked with me instead of just saying, who do you think is hotter, Jeremiah or LJ? to be honest, none. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I don't understand, like, why that kept being the go-to question. It's almost as if, like, they wanted that, like, tagline so that they could play that. But I'm like, no, I came to play. I want to talk about the game. I want to talk about where the idol is. I want to talk about how we can move. Like, so I can so echo that, Lyrissa, that, like, I just thought it was so odd. But I was a first-time player. Like, I did not know. So I wanted to be quiet. I wanted to make sure, like, you know, I could give them, like, you know, what I want. But at some point, I'm like, why does this question keep coming up? So,
No, yeah, I wanted to say the exact same thing. In my auditioning process, my package got picked up. Everything was great. They said that I had a good shot of being on the show. Everything was looking good. My mind was blown. And then randomly, my handler, she texts me and said, do you have any photos of you kissing a girl? And I said, no, like, why, what does that mean? Why do you need photos of me kissing a girl? And where would I put that photo? Where is that photo? Who am I giving said photo of me and another girl with? And I called her and she said that my application has a better chance of getting picked up and getting reviewed if I have this image of me kissing my girlfriend. And so whenever I was filling out the application, where you're checking boxes, female, black, gay, athletic, you know, likes macaroni, I filled all of that out, but I didn't have a girlfriend at the time. And so for my application to have made it so far and to be getting all of this good information, like, you're going to go, you're going to LA, you're going to meet Jeff, you're going to meet the whole team. And then all of a sudden, I want you to make one more video. And then in that video, just put a quick scene of you and your girlfriend hanging out. I never said that I had had a girlfriend at that time, but she's telling me the package will get picked up if you have this clip. And I really sat with it. So I called my ex, the last girlfriend that I had, and I had this conversation with her. And I told her, I really do want to be on the show. I love this show. I can't fathom that I've made it this far in the process anyway, but they want a photo of us kissing. And my girlfriend at the time wasn't out to her family. She wasn't out to pretty much her whole community, just had gotten a new job. And she obviously cares about me, still loves me. And she told me, I want you to have the best shot of making the show. You can use one of our photos. And it was just so absurd to me that for me to be of worth or of value to the show that I was willing to give everything to, that I gave everything to, you now need this photo of me kissing a girl to make my package the best possible package. With or without me kissing a girl, my package is the best package. I deserve to be on the show. And then getting onto the show, obviously my game was very rooted in strategy. I'm very strategic. But to even get questions where you and Elizabeth, your relationship seems to be blossoming. You guys spend all day together. Yes, because that is my best friend. Don't other girls have best friends? Do you ask other girls if she is dating those other girls? No. So what's the point of asking me if me and Elizabeth are now taking things to a new height? And then if when my girlfriend gets to the loved ones visit, if she's going to be upset? First of all, it's day 10. We can't talk about the loved one visit until I vote all these people out. So why would we even go that far? And why do you need to bring my island girlfriend in with the controversy of my fake girlfriend who you made me have for casting? It was just all so confusing, and have it play out before the island and then also get questions about it during the island. It just made no sense. I'm a great player regardless if I'm black, white, gay. I'm just a great player. No labels. I'm a great player. You don't need to see me kissing anyone to make me a great player.
Yeah, and thank you for that, particularly Missy and Lyrissa. I think that what you were articulating is significant because there is this notion of the way that lesbians are kind of utilized on the show, right? So you've all talked in a certain sense of how the show seems to gravitate toward the queer male. And so then you come in as props and there's this objectification. As I was listening to you talk, I was just sort of like, livid and beside myself because I couldn't believe that these are the things that are happening in the background, which also goes to what you were saying earlier, the need for there to be diverse and inclusive representation on the production side, because if that was there, those kind of questions could not be asked, or you would not force somebody to wager themselves for this opportunity. So, you know, we're about to kind of transition because we have a second half, but, you know, I want to kind of give you and Lyrissa last words for this moment, if you have any particular thoughts that you want to share about sort of this insidious sense of like objectifying the lesbian woman player.
I think it goes back to women are objectified regardless if they're straight or not. I think women are seen as women. If you date too many women, you know, you're a slut. Or if you date too many guys as a woman, you're a slut. And then if you're a lesbian, you have this image of you're supposed to go around and kiss everybody. Being a lesbian is kind of a joke in a lot of people's eyes. So you're supposed to date this person. And maybe if you do have a girlfriend and you are committed and you would never cheat, if I ask you this question, maybe you will. So just to actually see these stereotypes play out, not just from production, but also from people on the island, it was kind of heartbreaking because when you go and give yourself to a game like this, this game strips you of everything. Anything you think you have, when you go play this game, you will come back with less. And to have that, to already be going out there as an African-American, as a woman who's already spoken down to because I'm a woman, to add that extra layer on there, it just was so... I think Bryce said it, you're already starved, you're already dehydrated, and this adds a whole nother layer of we're playing the game 10 times over. We're playing the same game that everyone else is playing, but now I have to think about how does being Black factor in? How does being gay factor in? As much as I want to go console Elizabeth because she had a hard day and she's crying, if I do that too much, will they say that I'm trying to steal her from her boyfriend? It's just such a complicated, it's like a tightrope that you have to walk, and you make one misstep and you fall. It was just so difficult to watch that play out in that way. So, yeah, I think that's all I have, Lisa.
Yeah, I feel like Missy and also like I wanted the show also to be for me a platform to talk about who we are, that we exist, that people can relate to us. And we're not just like the girl that steals the boyfriend's girlfriend, or like we want to sleep with all the women in the world. And I think that got lost in this whole thing. And I was expecting more. And I keep telling that to my girlfriend, like not only regarding that, in so many other levels, I was expecting so much more of like a great outcome of the show. I was like, I don't care if I don't win. I was always joking with like my producer, like my casting person, like if I don't win, it's okay because I'm going to become a Celestian and then I'll have that platform and I'll be helping people, you know? And I'm nothing in that sense. I'm not a Celestian. I was not used in a good way in the end. And you know, if you want to talk to me, like you, the person that are out there and that you feel that you can relate to me, just approach me. Cause that was my whole idea. Being there at a horse place, if I won, I won. But I was also wanting to connect with other people like me and serve like as, you know, someone that they can look up and say like, yeah, she did it. She got there. I am like her. I can be like her. And I don't think it translated that way for me.
I don't think it followed the storyline. The storyline of Survivor is that a straight white male will make it to the end and he will win.
Yeah.
And so these complex storylines of me being Black and also a lesbian and also a woman, I think they just get lost. And they're not as important as showing Joe wear 50 necklaces around his neck, where when you have an African-American gay woman wear a necklace, you'll never see that confessional. You'll never see a photo of me wearing it. You'll never see a photo of me standing next to Aaron, another Black man who also wore it. These stories get lost because they don't seem to be important. And obviously they're the most important. So yeah, it's just heartbreaking to see and to really feel what's happening.
I truly hope that some Survivor folks, production directors, everybody else are watching this, and we have more to come. We are going to take a quick little intermission, but folks at home, we have a special treat for you. So stay tuned, and then we will return for some concluding thoughts.
I can't even tell you how many times I've been in public space, particularly early in my transition, when I would walk into a subway car and people would just burst into laughter. And I think people are been trained to have that reaction. According to a study from GLAAD, 80% of Americans
don't actually personally know someone who is transgender. So most of the information that Americans get about who transgender people are, what our lives are and are about, comes from the media.
We've been around since there was footage. You just have to look for us.
Can we all just talk about D.W. Griffith for a minute? Not only is he incredibly racist, but he turned gender nonconforming people into the joke.
So it's like you can't have like queer trans people and blacks in the same space at the same time. So what's it say about my queer trans black ass?
I've died so many times I can't even count on camera.
I've been a prostitute one, prostitute two, call girl, hooker.
The crying game created a ripple effect.
You are a trans person who existed, made people physically ill. Was the way in which my favorite movie as a child ended.
There are lots of ugly things about our history, but I think we have to know them.
I have been beaten. I have been thrown in jail for gay liberation, and you all treat me this way?
There is a one-word solution to almost all the problems in trans media. We just need more. And that way, the occasional clumsy representation wouldn't matter as much because it wouldn't be all that there is.
You see a fierceness that's coming up now. That's because we ain't got nothing to lose.
These are my sisters up here, but the struggle is real.
The ways in which trans people have been represented have suggested that we're mentally ill, that we don't exist, and yet here we are, and we've always been here.
So, first of all, if you have not seen the Netflix documentary Disclosure, I strongly suggest that you do that, maybe even after you finish being with us this evening. It's amazing. It's eye-opening, behind-the-scenes secret, as we were all sort of talking and meeting one another recently. I watched the documentary, and before I had the opportunity to meet Zeke, did not put the two together. And then he let me know, like, that's my documentary. And I was like, whoa, that's fast. That's amazing. So it's just really exciting for Zeke to be here. And we are going to continue our discussion. Of course, we just saw the trailer for Disclosure. So we should talk about Disclosure, right? So there is an element of disclosure and exposure that Survivor banks on. It's already working with the assumption that any contestant that plays on the show is going to be ready to disclose identity, but we have already heard how this works in particular ways. And so I think that we've heard that Missy has talked about how she needed to provide that image of her ex-girlfriend at the time. And so I know that Lyrsa also has a story to tell. So let's open this portion up by talking about this issue of disclosure and exposure and how one even becomes comfortable with it or uncomfortable with it. Because if we also think about it, nobody is asking the cis hetero cisgender person to disclose anything about themselves, right? They can just go on as normal, but there's almost a certain way that you are forced to disclose. So let's talk about disclosure and exposure on Survivor.
I'll hop in first because I'm in the documentary, and also because, you know, my decision not to disclose and that my, you know, being trans was disclosed for me is pretty well known in the community. So I guess my experience is a little bit different from what everyone else has articulated. And I first and foremost want to acknowledge that that is probably because I am a white guy. And even though I am gay, I am very masculine oriented, and that the people who make the decisions for who is cast, who makes the show, what the storylines are, they are almost exclusively, like 90% straight, cis, white men who are of a certain age, have a certain viewpoint. There is very little diversity. I have an entertainment background. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I knew exactly what my parameters were. For me, it wasn't like I'll do anything for Survivor. For me, it was like Survivor has to meet my terms. And I was just always very clear about what my terms were and how we were handling the trans story. And, you know, there were times where they're like, hey, like, can't we talk about you being trans? And I just straight up said, you ask me again, I'm quitting. And then I'm going to the media and explain why I quit. And, you know, we are living, we're at least we were at the time, and I think still now, living in a time where that threat held weight and that threat kept them in line. But I also knew that if I was like, I know you can't have the candy that you want. I mean, eventually they got it. But if you can't have the candy, then I have to give you story-wise something else. Like, I have to give you, you know, the friendship with the football player. I've got to make the fire. I've got to win the challenge. I got to build the shelter. Like, I have to be creating chaos and drama. Like, and I felt that was incumbent upon me, because if I didn't carry my weight story-wise doing stuff in the game or having interesting relationships, then my story was going to become about me being trans. And unlike everybody else, I did not walk into Survivor wanting to inspire young people. I feel differently now, and I feel like I've done a lot of work, and the work I do with trans youth and with their families is tremendously fulfilling. And, you know, I feel like now I have like a graduate degree in being trans and talking about being trans in the media. But, you know, I think I felt more empowered than other people do, because I understood more about how reality shows are made. And I think as players and as contestants, as like people in casting, as candidates in particular, we're made to feel so disempowered. We're made to feel grateful that we're there, and that if we complain, you know, we're shamed, and we feel like we have no wiggle room, that we have to say yes to whatever torturous and terrible thing they present in front of us so that we can have the honor of playing Survivor. And I just have so many things to say, and so many things that have been said resonate with me. But, you know, one last thing, and then I'll let other people speak, is that, you know, we call it a social experiment, but Survivor is a game show, and game shows are governed by laws in this country. And Jeff will make a big deal about before challenges being like, the challenges are so equal. We're out here and we weigh every single coconut that's going to go into the basket, that's going to drop a key, that's going to go into the slingshot, that's going to, you know, whatever else. But, you know, I think because there is just such a white male lens the show is put through, nobody thinks that, you know, people are that minorities, in particular people of color, women and queer people, and all of the intersections of those put you on a different playing field than if you are a traditionally white, masculine, athletic guy, that you have hurdles to overcome that other people don't. And I think that particularly extends to when we experience trauma. When we experience microaggressions or macroaggressions, you know, we experience these things that we feel like we can't make a big deal about. We can't emote about, because we don't want it to interrupt our game, or we don't want them to, like, you know, be reminded that we're different. And when you have the producers who are from their own perspective, they don't see that trauma. They don't know, even though that you can swallow it, how much it hurts and how much it eats you up. And I remember after I was outed, I played for 11 days, and basically everybody just decided to pretend that that hadn't happened. And I didn't know how to process those emotions, because I still wanted to play, and the cameras were still on, and I was at a loss, and I was in so much internal pain and turmoil and was spiraling out of control emotionally. And I've never felt so lonely in my entire life. And I think it's another argument for having a more diverse set of people behind the camera who can recognize the experiences of others. Sorry, I ranted too much. It's very passionate.
So in my case, regarding disclosing information, when they were doing the interview process, they asked me if I was, first of all, 100% lesbian. I'm like, yeah, I'm very, very gay. I'm extremely let's be honest. And they asked me if my family knew about it. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm pretty much out. Like, I have never told my dad, like, hey, I'm a dyke. But he knows, like, in my culture, in the Hispanic culture, we apply the policy of don't ask, don't tell. If it's not brought up, people know. And we have a saying that says, lo que se ve, no se pregunta. Like, what you can see and know, you don't have to ask about it. And there was a previous situation where a contestant that wasn't out and was outed during the show. And my casting person, which I love her, told me, you need to tell your dad. You need to be very clear with your dad. So I called my dad and I kind of like mentioned it to him. And his reply was, so how are the cats? And it was near Thanksgiving. And he started asking me about our plans regarding Thanksgiving, because I was going to see my brother. I was going to meet him. And about the cats. He didn't pay attention to me trying to come out to him, right? So I told my casting director, like, oh, yeah, I told him. And he asked me about the cats. And she was like, what? I'm like, yeah, he asked me about how were the cats and what were my plans for Thanksgiving. Like, I don't think he cared. And she's like, no, but you have to be really clear to tell your dad that you're a lesbian. You have to tell him to be on the show. So I sent him an email that I have right in front of me. I wrote it in Spanish. So I'm going to do a quick translation. It says, like, Daddy, you know, I love you. And I will never would like to hurt you or make you mad. You know that I'm in the Survivor finals and some things are going to come out. And one of the things that might come out is that I have a girlfriend. And I'm telling you this because I want you to be prepared in case this is released to the world. I don't think this is a surprise to you, but you should know it coming from me and not for what somebody else is going to say. Fernando and Bobby, which is my brother and his husband, met her during Thanksgiving and they really like her. You know that I love you and that doesn't change who I am. I sent that to my dad on November 28, 2017 at 11:52 in the morning. I'm still waiting for his reply. He never asked me anything about it. He never said anything about it. He met my girlfriend and sometimes I think he likes her more than me, but that was never an issue to my family. And now it really, to me, is like, why they care so much about what my family was going to say about this? Because they knew. I mean, I didn't have to tell my dad. He knew. I mean, my brother is gay. He was at their wedding. There was no issues. I knew there was not any issues. But to put me in that situation and telling my dad, please don't be mad. You know, don't hate me because of who I am, even though I know you're not. It was really difficult. And again, I'm still waiting for his reply. He never answered the email. It was never a concern to him.
I think
I do. Go ahead, Missy.
Okay, I love you. I think my story is a little similar to Lisa's. My family has always known, and I went to a private Christian high school, so it was not okay to be anything other than basically straight. If you're not straight, you're wrong. And there has always been something wrong with you. And so high school was difficult. I may not have known necessarily that I liked women, but I knew for sure that men weren't doing it in high school. I knew that for a fact. Didn't know why. And then I had the opportunity to go to college. I went to the Air Force Academy. And being in the military, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law wasn't repealed until recently, 2012. And so I was in the military. And there were still laws about how you can't be gay in the military. If you're gay, this will happen. If we find out you're gay, this will happen. Here's how much money you'll pay back if we see you kissing someone that has the same body parts as you. And so to go to the Air Force Academy while all this is going on, it was just very stressful. It was similar to my high school experience where you're not allowed to talk about it or something really bad will happen. And once it was repealed, it was refreshing to see other people at the academy opening up and saying, I've always been gay. I never was able to talk about it because I can't pay back $500,000 in loans to the Air Force because I'm gay. And to have so many people around me willing to walk in their truth, I think for me, it kind of happened naturally. My whole basketball team was basically gay, and to be around people who were like-minded, it was a safe space. So I was always allowed to be myself, and I never felt judged. And so for me, because I travel so much and I'm very independent and I'm always on the move, I take very good care to only put the people in my circle who I know see me and who also walk in their truth. If you walk in your truth, whatever that truth is, you won't mind if I walk in mine. And I've just learned that just from time and time again, if you have people in your circle that walk in their truth and that will say and do how they feel and do what they want, then when I bring my girlfriend around, when I bring somebody around, it's not, whoa, she kisses girls. It's, she's beautiful. It's so nice to finally meet her. It's a totally different experience when you are around people who love you and care about you. And then with my family, I had to have a very similar conversation. And for me, I just told them, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this game, whatever that means. We'll all watch the edit together. My mom sat me down and she just told me, I was dating someone a little bit before that. And she said, I've always known that was your girlfriend. She's not your best friend. She doesn't just fly into Atlanta just because. And when she said that, I was kind of scared because my family is very Christian. And I didn't know how to respond. And I'm usually very, very seldom am I speechless. And just for her to say that and not judge me and not hate me, not want to hit me, you know, none of those negative things, it helped. Does she necessarily agree with it? I'm sure probably not. But she would never disrespect someone that I love or care about. And so in that way, I feel very privileged in my experience of kind of coming out and being who I am and walking in my truth. I've always felt that I was given that opportunity to do so.
I think, sorry, Vince, go, and then we are going to transition out.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think my experience was very different from everybody else's that I've heard thus far. And I think it's because I was just such an anomaly that people didn't really know how to like approach things because I think it depends on where you are too in your identity and how strongly you feel about certain things. And I knew immediately that I was just going to do it, and I was going to do it for those little kiddos out there who, like, for the refugee community, Southeast Asian communities, and the Hmong community, LGBTQ kids are afraid to come out because when our families were running through the jungles escaping genocide, parents would not leave behind children, even though children could cry and alert the Viet Cong or the communists, they would not leave those kids behind. But in the U.S., when kids come out, their parents disown them. Their families disown them. That is the narrative that we've heard. And I was like, that is not the narrative that I want to continue. So I'm going to go on here. I'm going to let people know I am gay. And that's going to be what it is. And so for me, my experience with Survivor was that they were actually quite respectful of my own process of coming out and things like that. I think it definitely is something that depends on where you are in your identity and the formation of that, and that we experience things very differently with the different producers and different casting associates and things like that. So I do just want to put that out there that, like, for me personally, that was, like, not what happened, but yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. And, you know, Missy and Lyrsa, I love what you two said. I'm really going to take home what you can see and know you don't have to ask about. And also, Missy, what you said in terms of if you walk in your truth, you won't be worried about someone else, right? And part of that is also having a more expansive view of how people live and move and have their being in the world. So I think that you all are pointing to something really significant. So we have about two more questions. This one feels like a really hot topic, but it's also the specter that has kind of been guiding our conversation. So there's this theory that the show is guided by the specter of white male privilege. And that's the reason why there can be a sort of like white gay privilege or gay white male privilege. So how is this experience on the show How is this complicated by someone such as Zeke having a trans identity? And do you see yourself as responsible for relinquishing any of the privilege that might be inherent in a show that's already constructing itself around a fairly heteronormative gaze in one way, a very white male gaze? So how do you think through this? How do you react to it?
It's very interesting for me because often when I'm addressing this question, I'm talking to other LGBT people and we say like, is there a white cisgender, chiseled muscle gay male privilege? And I think that, typically I'm on a different side of this question, but I think in the survivor context, it's important to answer on the side of like, I both played the game and was treated afterwards with an abundance of white male privilege. And because although I am gay and I am trans, I trend very masculine. I've got a big hairy chest. I have traditionally masculine interests. And I think that because the show, I was unequivocally made through a white male lens, especially if we look historically at what we now know to be the culture of CBS, which was run by Les Moonves, who had this culture of, not promoting women, not promoting people of color, and also having everyone cover up his blatant sexual harassment for decades. That is not a network that I think that can have a critical look at stories outside of what they think is going to make a Midwestern mom comfortable. And I think that's the lens through which Jeff makes the show. I remember in our conversations trying to make sense of what was about to happen to me. He was saying, it's going to be okay. I've shown my mom the episode and my mom is my barometer of how the rest of the world will react. And she likes you. And nothing against Jeff's mom. She's a wonderful lady. And although I get frustrated with Jeff a lot, I do like him as a person. But I do think that shows how limited it is, because I wonder if my story would have had the same impact that it had in opening people's minds to transgender people if I were a black trans woman, if I was not as digestible, I suppose you could say, as I am. I think that, not being visibly trans provided me a lot of cover in my first season. I think that if I was not white, if I was more femme presenting, if it was known that I was trans, I think I would have been the first person voted out of the Millennials tribe. I think my ability to, lean into my masculinity or my broiness and sort of kept me, kept me alive in the early parts of my season, which allowed me to progress a little bit further. I think that I've already spoken about how there needs to be more diversity on the other side of the camera, because if you have people with the same perspective, they can't see the possibilities for new stories. They don't know the questions to ask. They don't know the richness behind multiple identities trying to navigate this game, and how our lives as queer people or people of color has made us survivors already, has built us and given us the armor to play the game. And I can't say it enough how much it is important to bring other people in, as well as it's important to investigate where is the implicit bias in the people who make the show. I think if you were to pull these, largely straight white men that we're talking about, I would guarantee that almost none of them voted for Trump, and all of them, voted for Obama and voted for Hillary. But that doesn't mean that they don't hold like unconscious bias, which is dictating the narrative direction of the show. And as far as this is the last thing I'll say, as far as James relinquishing privilege, you know, I grew up in the feminist world, and I'm, as trans people, our community teaches that it's our job to center the voices of the most marginalized, which is why we always try to amplify the voices of the Black and brown trans women of color in our community. And, you know, I had a really great relationship with the show. I was very tight with a lot of the producers. We would go to football games and do Spartan races and like go out and for drinks and dinner. Like I had a very close relationship with the show. But then when Kelly Kim came home from Survivor, she was a Survivor class. She was a Harvard classmate of mine. You know, she told me about what happened, and I sort of helped guide her through the process. And what was so glaring is that I was treated so much better than she was. I was given access to a year's worth of therapy that they paid a lot of money for. I was given access to what my narrative was going to be. I had a phone number of people that I could call whenever I got stressed out. I had legions and legions of support, like up into including Jeff himself. And you know, I had guarantees leaving Fiji. Like I had conversations with Jeff before I left Fiji about how things were going to go down. And, you know, Kelly got none of that. Kelly didn't get the mental health care. Kelly didn't get the access. Kelly didn't get the, you know, support from external organizations. And I think the reason why I got that is because Jeff could see himself in me. And with Kelly, I spoke out for Kelly. I was critical of how the show handled Kelly's situation, and I've not heard a peep from anybody since. There have definitely been consequences for me and my status with the show for speaking out. And I think that's how the show controls us, is if you are critical of the show, you're going to get taken off the returner list. I don't want to go back, so I don't care. So I'm happy to stand to my principles. Sorry to
yep. And I wanted to say, for the question, I love that it was on the banner down below, to say gay, white, male privilege. If you remove the word gay, then Zeke, Reed, and Josh, I saw Gabby put in the comments, they all pass, you know? So if they pass, the white male privilege still exists. So all the things that a white male would receive that we do not, me as a Black woman, me as a gay Black woman, I wouldn't receive those things. But if you pass, then you receive a lot better treatment. I loved how he talked about him, his situation versus Kelly's, because as a white male, if Jeff does see himself in Zeke as another white male, then obviously the superior, you know, race will get more. So it is, you see it all the time. I think you can remove gay, you can keep gay there, but the real buzzword is white male privilege. Regardless if you're female, it's the white male privilege that's there. And then if you're gay and you don't, and you have a hairy chest and you're tall, you're thin, or you're thin, you're fit, you're attractive, the abs, wow, then you still fit this archetype that is meant to win the game. If you look like you're meant to win the game, then that edit will be a lot different than someone who they don't care about our stories as much.
And so speaking of caring about your stories, we have to have the conversation about what are the solutions that we want for the next generation of Survivor to go forward, which is about what is the significance of having more LGBTQ queer identifying people behind the scenes. So that's behind the camera. That's I don't think there's like a writer's room per se, but what does it mean to have better, diverse, and inclusive reflection behind the scenes in order to tell those stories well? So like, that's the question, is like, how exactly will it help tell your stories better and create a better show where then we're not asking these questions about how white male privilege is operating in yet another space?
I think then...
Yeah. Yeah, I can talk a bit about that. So I think, you know, even before diversifying the cast of Survivor, I think it's important for there to be folks who identify with potential players, right? Having people in casting who can go to make sure that, you know, every almost many seasons, the show is actually filmed on like Native Indigenous land, but you know, we have not seen any Samoans, we have not seen any Tongan people, we have not seen any Fijians who have been cast in the show. And so it's like, if we are able to have people who can effectively scout or find individuals with these different narratives, then bringing them into the game, we can then promote a more inclusive space, building upon the fact too that you would then need more people with these similar experiences in production, in all of the you know, behind the scenes work and things like that, to ensure that folks feel supported. I still think that it is it's kind of crazy that we still don't have like an Indigenous Native American person from the res on the show, or even a Two-Spirit Native Indigenous person on the show. And that really comes from having a group of individuals who are pushing the show forward, but also understand the context of potential players and also current players, right? So I think that first and foremost, one of the things that can be done is to find production managers or find casting associates who can relate directly back to those very people with whom you are trying to get on the show.
And then also imagine if Joe, who's won 50 million necklaces, who everybody loves and cares about, imagine if Joe were to win something or do something important and for some reason it didn't make the edit. And I'm going to grad school now, and I'm talking a lot about bias. But anytime something happens, I like to take it and flip it. If I were to win a necklace and it's not shown, but then Joe wins a necklace and it is shown, that is bias. And a way to stop that bias is just to have people on the cast, we should be represented in production. I should be able to look at the people around me holding the camera and see myself in those people. I should be able to look up, be starving and dehydrated, but then also see, what, if there's four Black people on my tribe, I should see at least four Black cameramen as well. Because maybe if something were to happen, they could then speak out behind the scenes, hey, we need to address this, or hey, this should be seen. And also, same thing with gay people. If we had other queer people on production, the conversation that Vince and I have that we still both think about daily, and it's been over a year now, that conversation would have been shown because somebody on production would see themselves in those castaways. No one on production is seeing themselves in these minority people. So if you don't see yourselves, why would you want to represent it? They're showing what they see and what they feel. And when you're starving and dehydrated, people typically tend to go to the people that they're comfortable with. Same thing with production. They go with what they're comfortable with. And what they're comfortable with is always showing the same iconic white male wear 50 necklaces. There are other minorities who have just as many necklaces as Joe. He can't be the only person seen. So if we have more representation in production, I feel like it would change the game for Survivor. If we can see more people like us, I feel like I told Jeff to his face, if we see more people like us, more people will want to watch. More people will want to work for Survivor, but we're not seeing that it's possible. If I can only hold up 10 hands and I can barely count the number of Black players or the number of gay players that I want to emulate or be like, that's a problem. And no one here could probably name the LGBTQ people on the production panel because I've barely heard of any of them. I know maybe one person, and that has to be a problem that has to be fixed. Without the representation, it's hard to show us.
Yeah, I think also one of the things too is like without like a producers who we can identify with during our one-on-ones, it's as Missy said earlier, it's very hard to come out and be yourself, right? And so if you have somebody who you can immediately have a connection with, then you can be good old little old Vince from the 209. But if you don't, then you turn into somebody who has consistently been told that you have to assimilate and you have to code switch into the larger culture, which is exactly what I'm doing right now, right? The ways in which I'm talking, I can immediately go from this very academic to like, hey, what's up? What are we going to talk about? And so I think that's something that is important too, because then they can also reconstruct the questions that they ask, right? I don't think anybody really understands what it means to be gay and East and Southeast Asian American on the show. They don't understand how model minority myth still plays into that, on top of like ideas of being a forever foreigner, on top of being thought of as like sneaky, but then also being thought of as like going to be like incredibly strategic, but then also people not believing that I was low income, or I grew up low income, and thinking that I was some sort of privileged, like just stereotypical Asian person. They don't realize how those stereotypes and those biases impact on top of what it means to be gay and to be a little more flamboyant when you want to be, but then also still be able to be called an axe man because you're chopping everything down. So I think that's where if there are more people who can identify with, then they can also then reconstruct questions and reconstruct the narrative from immediately on the island so that they have storylines to go to, right? Right now, it seems like there aren't storylines to go to because the questions are not being asked in such a way that it creates these different opportunities to find different ways of expressing what we as players go through on the game.
Yes. Absolutely. And I really feel like to what Vince just said was that think about like when we've played and we are talking to one of the producers behind the scenes. And it's like, imagine what it would be like if you felt as comfortable to see yourself, and imagine like how they change the questions. It could actually change your game, and it actually could really propel you to go farther in the game, which is, for me, is so important. It brings me back to the Disclosure movie, is that like when I watched the Disclosure movie, I really was moved by it because it really made me think of the first time that I ever saw a gay black person or someone imitating a gay black person on TV. And for me, it was in Living Color and the Wayans brothers. They had like these two TV show hosts that are like, hey. And so like my brothers teased me about that. They said like, that's you. And I couldn't understand like what that meant, but I knew it was a bad thing, or not a bad thing, but I knew that like I would be ridiculed or teased about it. But I say that to say that if Survivor were to have more producers of people of color, of LGBTQ, it would broadly change the landscaping of how the players did and how well the players did, that it would broadly change the landscape of the society, because Survivor is the granddaddy of shows. And what it would, like, it takes me back to when I saw that image of a gay black man, and I'm like, but imagine if they saw an image of a gay black man winning Survivor. And a lot of the times I get this criticism that like, oh, you're a bad player, Bryce, just shut up and be quiet. Like, I'm a fan of the show Survivor. I understand how I played. But to those naysayers, please understand that I am not here crying about my edit. I'm not crying about how I went. I am crying about the lack of representation and what that would look like moving forward. And I had saw someone tweet me about an article that recently came out where I said I was the first openly gay black man. And underneath they said, well, there's plenty of gay winners and there are plenty of black winners. And I'm like, yes, exactly. My point is exactly. And how many gay black winners are there? 40 seasons. Yeah, that silence. I'm still waiting for that person to respond to tell me how many they was.
I'm literally like, I was waiting for you at the door, because that's a real thing. So we're about to sort of conclude, but I think one of the things that's really significant to think about, and I'm loving seeing all of the comments on this, is that, you know, first of all, everyone is cheering you all on, particularly talking about the fact that we need to take your vulnerability and support it with action. And so, you know, to that end, and talking about supporting it with action, we have the petition that has been circulating around from the Soul Survivor Group or Soul Survivor Organization that everybody needs to pay attention to. But also because there's a sense that production might not be watching this, but production needs to be well aware of this conversation that's happening, because it's
I'll make sure they get the link. Don't worry about that.
There you go, Zeke.
I still got their email addresses.
All right. Slide in their DMs and let them know. But I think it's significant for these conversations to continue to go, for us to risk to have the conversation. As I shared with the group a couple of days ago when we were just prepping for this, it's even something to think about when we talk about relinquishing privilege. When I was approached to do this, I had a moment where I was like, I don't know. Should, yes, no, yeah, I'm excited. Oh my gosh, because I thought about my positionality as a cis, hetero, Black woman. And so I was like, is this my space? Am I supposed to moderate this discussion? And after sort of consulting my council of reliable people, one of the things that was generative was that you have to risk to have the conversation to learn in the first place. And so some of that is possibly risking a mistake, but it's also about saying, I'm sorry, how can I respond better? Not to sort of like cower in the darkness or refuse to engage, because I think that something someone said in the comments is that people don't know what they don't know. Producers and editors can be all for diversity, but that's less important than having people who have a lived experience, right? And as someone who considers themselves a Black feminist and womanist, I'm all about the lived experience. And so I think what we've done here is powerful. We are mirroring what we want. And I think that that's what this entire concept is about with the Soul Survivor organization. So we've sort of want to close out. And this is kind of like a wild card question. It's not what we originally discussed, but it is sort of, what are your hopes and dreams for how Survivor can be better in terms of LGBTQ intersectionality? And you could just do a round robin and everybody kind of express their hopes and dreams going forward, because the point of this is not to stop anybody from watching Survivor. It's not for you to say, I can't believe this is happening with production, but it is to push people, to pressure people to respond differently, to create differently, to expand their vision. So hopes and dreams for Survivor going forward, how can they do it better?
Let our voices be heard. Like, we are more than the token Hispanic, the token lesbian, the token gay guy. Like, tell our stories too, because that's one of the reasons that many of us go into the show, to be, you know, be heard and like, and people can relate to us, to make feel that you are not alone. There's somebody out there like you, and we are here.
I love the show. I want to continue to be a fan of the show. I want to see the show continue to go far beyond where it's at now. And I, the one thing that I would say that is that for every Ozzy, for every Joe Ingram, for every these amazing players that you have, there are just as many Black players like that. There are just as many queer players just like that, that we here, okay, we ain't like, you know, like they said in the Disclosure movie, we've been here the whole time. And it's so if take the time to look and see. And if you look and see and bling over that tree, baby, you will be pleasantly surprised, and that you don't always have to continue to go with the same type of, there are more than one winners, because we're all survivors. So I'm excited. And I think it's at such a critical time, because they just announced that season 40 is not going to be coming out in the fall. And what a great time for them to truly hear what we are saying. Know that we aren't yelling and complaining. Like, we are truly saying, like, please hear us, because we love the show. We want to continue to see the show going farther. And this is a way that you can do it. And I would love to see. I am what you listen. I got my favorites when I see people, but I am waiting for the day that I could scream that there is a Black gay male winner, that there's a Black female gay winner, that there is a Black Latina gay winner, that there, like, I'm just waiting for the day, because I know what's coming. I know what's coming. And I know that they are probably in these comments watching us, getting inspired. And so wherever y'all at, just know Bryce was rooting for you first. Okay.
Yes. I would say lower our threat level. So if there is only one black person on a tribe and there's another black person on another tribe, or there's only one gay person on a tribe and then only one on the other, something does not look like the other things. We're going to get voted out because we don't fit in. We're not the same. The way we act is different. The way we speak is different. The way we want to join into conversations, all of that is different. If you cast more of us, our threat level will be lowered. If you see me in the final six as a 5'11", outspoken, blunt, black woman who is also gay, you're going to vote me out. You should, because I am strategic and I deserve to win. But you're going to vote me out for all of these things that I am. I don't want to leave the game because of how I was born. I was born this way and I'm here to play. If you cast more of us, my threat level will be lowered. Give me a shot. Give Bryce a shot. Give Lyrsa a shot. Give Zeke, Vince. Give all of us a shot to win the game. And by doing that, our threat levels are lowered. Have more of us out there.
Yeah, I wanna echo what Missy said, which is also something that Jen Richards says in Disclosure, which you can watch on Netflix. Just had to get my plug in. I think the answer is more. A few weeks ago, I was looking at who was winning Survivor and who was getting voted out first, and overwhelmingly, white men and just white people in general are winning Survivor. I think we're on a streak of like 5 or 6 white people, or Survivor 6, not white people, but men winning in a row. And like, why is it the case that the only Survivor season where there has been, where white people have not been the majority of players, was the season where races were pitted against each other? Like, why does that need to be true? Like, Survivor, you know, America is not, can't be a microcosm of itself, because every place in America is different. They're predominantly white places. They're predominantly black places. Urban places, like, you know, like Los Angeles and New York, are different from like urban areas in Oklahoma City. And I think we need to push our vision out of the idea that, like, okay, well, we'll have 70% white people and then 30% people of color. I think we just need to cast the most interesting people. And if there are no white people or no straight people on a season, great, because there have been no black people on seasons. There have been no queer people on seasons. Like, you know, there have been 500, 600 Survivor players, and there's only one trans person, you know. But I, the reason I caution other trans people from playing is, like, I don't know that it's a super safe environment for you. I don't know that it is. And I feel that about other queer people, particularly BIPOCs. But until we can get to a place where we don't have to feel like we're going to be the only ones out there, where we can play with allies in the same way that, like, the beefy white guys play with allies, like, we're never going to have an equal shot to win. So we have to even the playing field.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of what to say, but I think for me personally, I just want Survivor, the producers, Jeff, everybody else, to know that we as contestants and past contestants love this show. This show has shaped so many of our lives, mine in particular. And the reason why we're speaking out or talking about this is because we know, like Bryce said, there are other kids out there who are very similar with us, who share very similar backgrounds, and we want their narratives to be present. We want their narratives to be told, and the only way of doing that is really taking a step back and assessing exactly what it is about the show that perpetuates systemic racism, that perpetuates the systemic oppression of minoritized people, that perpetuates sexism and things like that, and then taking that and moving forward so that you can produce a show that resonates with the times, that resonates with the growing population of minorities and people of color in the country. And then, you know, hopefully this is also not something that is going to be construed as us being angry, of us being loud or inflammatory, because I have been told that enough in my life with the work that I do. In admissions, you got to fight for your kids. And so to be told that constantly. I just also want producers to know that this is us coming from a good place of goodwill. This is us trying to better the show because we love the show and we have been influenced by it. And it is not us critiquing it in a way to like bring it down, but more so in a way that we can have narratives of, say, Native Indigenous people talking about what it means to be Native Indigenous. You know, so it's a Australian Survivor, they have Aboriginal players who talk about what it means to be Indigenous, who talk about the indigeneity. And so I think it's just really about creating space for these narratives that have been so long told that they don't belong, that we are foreign, that we are not a part of the American narrative, or if that we are in supporting roles, that we don't deserve the same kind of recognition. And for all those little kids out there, I just want y'all to know that you are deserving of everything and your narratives are important.
Thank you for that, Vince. Really, like, seriously, preach. Because your vulnerability is important. Your story is important. Everything that we've heard tonight is important. I saw Sierra say in the comments something that I think is an important closing note for us, which is that this is a call in and not a call out. You know, obviously we exist in cancel culture in a way, right? And so it could be easy for somebody to walk away from tonight and say, you know, hashtag survivors canceled. That's not the purpose of this, because each of you is tied to this game, has found meaning in this game, has gone through the trials and tribulations that have made you able to speak about this in love, right? I believe in speaking truth to power. And I think that that's what has happened tonight. And so I challenge everybody who has been listening to kind of continue the conversation, to share the petition, to sign it, to slide in the DMs. If you know people, you know, Zeke is going to slide in the DMs of some folks. I know our people on Twitter are going to slide in the DMs. We have more power than we believe we do. And so now is the time for us to take that and to also just know that we are calling people in. I think it's important to stress that, right? I don't believe in calling people out. I do believe in calling people in. It's part of the discipline I find myself in as a PhD student in religion. You know, we can have faith in a process to hope that it will change. And so that's what this is about. So I want to thank all of you for being here, for sharing your stories. I hope that we will continue to have these conversations, that will continue to grow together, that Survivor will get better by leaps and bounds, especially with, you know, this kind of time off that they have. Maybe they can right the ship in that time. But again, thank you for everybody that's watched. Thank you for the panel. Yeah, this has been incredible, and I look forward to more. So good night to everyone.
Night.